Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media and WBFO, this is What's Next, Producer's Picks. Highlights of conversations heard on previous episodes. On today's show,
that community is still in need of healing, and I'm grateful now that the Lord has allowed us to be a part of the healing process. That we gonna do what we do, and we're gonna make it popping, and we're gonna make it happen. I'm old school now, We're gonna make it popping.
We feature Pastor Charles McCarley. And we close with,
and so that's happening across our state. And so we need a fully funded Medicaid program in New York State so we can be healthier and people can get the treatment that they need and they deserve, because healthcare is a right.
Healthcare advocate Jasmine Westbrook. I'm Michael Loss. First, we revisit Jillian Hainsworth's conversation with Pastor Charles McCarley of the Tabernacle of Praise Church. The two discuss the role that religious leaders play in the community.
You're the pastor of Tabernacle of Praise, a.k.a. TOP.
Great people go to the top. Come on.
Yes, tell us, ma'am, a little bit about Tabernacle of Praise.
Tabernacle of Praise, a phenomenal group of people. We're located now on the east side of Buffalo. Tabernacle of Praise was established back in 1991, founder being Pastor Deborah Scott. She was amazing in what she was able to accomplish in her time. But even in that, there were a lot of shortcomings that she had to endure, basically because she felt that there were not a lot of women preachers or pastors, and they did not have the platform as men pastors. So it was a fight. It was a struggle in the beginning. You would think, wow, 1991, you would think that, no, it was still a lot of, oh, no, we don't deal with women pastors. You can't come here. You can't stand in my pulpit. You know how the traditional stuff go. And she had to really push through that and say, no, this is what God has called us to do. So she established the ministry, established this church, and through the years and trying to really get it off the ground, she became terminal ill with lung cancer, I believe, in the final year of her life. I began to come around, and that was my godmother. So she would say, Bear, I need you to come and speak. Yeah, she called me Bear. Bear, I need you to come and speak. And I did not have any idea what was going on. I did not know that she was ill. I did not know that she didn't have any other clergy there. It was just her really plowing that field. And she would have me come in and speak, and I would do one Sunday a month, and then it turned into twice a month, and then it eventually turned into speaking every Sunday. And I can remember it very clearly that, I started somewhere in January, and then by July she had passed on. So I had really 6 to 7 months, yeah. 6 to 7 months there before she passed on. Now I have been thrusted into something I did not ask for. Mm-hmm. Don't nobody, man. Ain't nobody trying to be nobody's pastor. Wasn't trying to be, head of no church. But I see that my path grew and was on a direction that I just didn't have no control over. But I still was able to say yes to that. And now 10 years later, here we are still pastoring this phenomenal church, mm-hmm, and it is doing great things. So yeah. I'm very happy and proud to be a part of this ministry. I promise you, there's days. Yeah, there's some days. But overall, the Lord has been kind to us, and I'm grateful. Yeah.
Well, spoiler alert, I am a member of Tabernacle.
Come on now. Say it again. I don't think the people heard you.
I am a member of the TOP, where great people go.
Come on. Yeah.
When I joined, the church was on Northland. So I technically am an OG because the church is not on Northland anymore. So now we're on Genesee
Street. Right?
Why Genesee? Like, what drew you to this community specifically?
Genesee Street. Well, as you said, we were right there on Wohlers and Northland. And that was a time we were about 7 years on Northland, and we were bouncing around even before we found that location. And that was really where the old folk would say you get to cut your teeth. So I was able to learn a whole lot on Northland Street, and it really thrusted me into a community mindset, because that community right there on Northland and Wohlers had everything I needed in order to really establish a church community relationship. There was a school there, there was housing there, and we found out that there was no, even though there were corner stores, mm-hmm. you know, it's a food desert in that area. Mm-hmm. And when we came through the May 14th shooting, when Tops was now shut down, there was nothing mm-hmm. over there. We were able to now provide levels of support to the community, which really was like, okay, we are really drawn into this whole community thing. So Genesee Street is just now us expanding what we have already started and planted and practiced mm-hmm. on Northland. So now that we have more space and more opportunity, I grew up on Genesee and Zinner, okay. right there by Bailey. So I am basically back into my old stomping ground in that neighborhood. And I remember it when I was young, where predominantly, once you crossed over Bailey, there were no black families. Mm. And we were right there. Center is right there, Wendy, and then there's Bailey, and where the McDonald's is, and then crossing over there, you didn't cross over Bailey if you were black. Mm-hmm. In that we did not go over there. We didn't have the privileges of going over to Schiller Park yeah. because we would get ran out. Trust me, I'm talking from experience. So this ain't nothing. I remember running down Genesee Street back over Bailey. And it was troublesome then. And now that our community has expanded, you know, past Bailey, even going towards now the Pine Ridge area, mm-hmm. I see that there is a great need for our people. Mm-hmm. And I'm noticing that there is a lot of changes mm-hmm. that are now in our communities, where once where it was a predominantly white area that transitioned to a predominantly black area mm-hmm. that now is transitioned to a predominantly, you know, a Bangladesh area. You mm-hmm. know, there's a lot of those nationalities that are now, and it's a blended community. Mm-hmm. So we're learning how to service all people. Mm-hmm. There has been quite a bit of, it's a troublesome area. Not too long ago, the young boy who lost his life, it was right on the street that we are now located on, mm-hmm. you know, so that community is still in need of healing. And I'm grateful now that the Lord has allowed us to be a part of the healing process, that, you know, we gonna do what we do, you know, yeah. and we're going to make it poppin', and we're going to make it happen.
Make it
know?
Poppin'.
Yeah, I'm old school now, you know, yeah. We're going to make it poppin'.
We're going to work on our slang. We're going to work on my,
all right,
slang.
Help me out. Help me out.
Yeah, I got you. I got you. Right. Yeah, we'll get on that. But one of the things that attracted me to Top was mm-hmm. the community involvement. Mm-hmm. Now, you definitely, you know, once we kind of started sitting down and talking about mm-hmm. ways to collaborate, I was working at Open Buffalo at the time. Eventually you were like, come to my church. Yeah. Just come on a Sunday.
Right.
And it took a couple of years before I before I started coming.
You were suffering
for real.
From commitment anxiety. I got you. Yeah. But we worked through it. Come on.
We worked through it. But the consistency, not just with me, but like with the community. Mm. Was something that stuck out to me. Mm. I saw you come in and picking up school lunches or free lunch in the summer and going and giving them out to kids on Northland, the barbecues, the pantry, mm-hmm. just kind of a whatever you need, I got you, I can help type of mentality. And for me, that is something that has been missing mm-hmm. in the community, especially coming from the church. Mm-hmm. A lot of times mm-hmm. we know that the church is a body of people and not mm-hmm. a building, mm-hmm. but a lot of times we don't see the people expand outside of the building mm-hmm. in the way that is necessary mm-hmm. to reach the community. And historically, mm-hmm. especially in black communities, mm-hmm. the church, mm-hmm. that is a moral leader.
Yes.
That's a political leader, mm-hmm. a social leader. Like mm-hmm. the church is where Malcolm X will mm-hmm. go and meet to get on the same page with Christians. That's where, you know, the Black agenda was birthed in the church. So seeing this kind of community relationship for me was really important. And I think it speaks to a larger issue or a larger conversation that we need to have as it pertains to the church's role in the fight for justice, the church's role in advocating for the community. What do you think is the church's position or responsibility when it comes to supporting and advocating for the needs of the community?
You're absolutely right, Jill. The church was I'm even going to say still is, but we've seen a more vibrant, active role in days past. The church was the epicenter of the community. It was the center. It was everything deemed from the church. The church was built upon community and fellowship because we couldn't get it nowhere else. It was the only place where Blacks, Browns could come and gather in peace and actually sometimes feel and have dignity about being Black.
Yeah.
Because once you walked out them doors, you were now immediately reminded of who you really are and what everything else was around you. You know, living in a white city or a white world. You're right. So coming to the Black church, we were able to dress up. We were able to look, you know, we were able to have dignity. We were able to have some pride about ourselves. And it became so popular, it became so contagious. Amen. I'm sorry. Amen. I'm sorry. Here we go.
It's the offering.
It's about to come. That's right. it became so contagious that, you know, it spread it out throughout the city that, you know, even there had to be agendas to try and shut that down because, you know, once we come together, we can accomplish anything.
Power in the people.
We can do anything. Come on, power of the people. And other peoples did not like that. We find that even in of scripture, if you will, where they speak to Pharaoh and they say, the people, what if they ever lift up their head and realize that we are outnumbered, that these Israelites that are, we got enslaved, that are putting their heads down and till in the mud, if they will ever realize who they really are and what they bring, and they will understand that they're stronger and better together, we would be no match for them. So what we got to do, we have to destroy that feeling, destroy that sense of hope, destroy that. And that's what they really did. Yeah. Then, you know, they begin to infiltrate the church by dismantling the family. Understand that the churches aren't strong by himself. It doesn't start with the church. It starts with the family. So if you have a strong families create strong churches. Strong churches create strong communities. And then strong communities will create a strong city. Strong cities create a strong country. But it all starts with the family. So if I can dismantle the family, everything else will domino effect and fall out of place. So look at our homes. We don't have family dinners no more. Look at our homes. We don't come and sit to the tables anymore. These were structures and these were, you know, in the family that was a necessity. You sat with Big Mama and learned how to pop peas, right? Nowadays, you got steamables that you throw in the microwave. Ain't nobody sitting there learning nothing. So we've lost that aspect. And then we're still trying to hold on to, you know, the importance of the church. Well, we got to start with the importance of the family. We got to go back to, you know, the importance of a strong Black father in the home and a strong Black mother in the home, not trying to carry it all by herself, but we're raising our strong Black children together. And, you know, then understand that we can't do it alone. We need a greater power. We need someone to work with us. And then the church now comes into partnership with the family. But if we can never get that partnership together, then we are weakened even in our communities because you don't even respect the church for what it is.
Yeah.
You don't respect the pastor that's standing there. You know, back in the day, there was a reverence for the church. You know, the pastor would come over dinner and, you know, he automatically got the big piece of chicken. Yeah.
So you're trying to get the big piece of chicken.
I'm trying to get the big piece. No. But there was a reverence there. Mm-hmm. And then there was a respect there, you know, but now it's different. And now we're in the informational age. Now everything you're saying, I'm fact checking and I'm going and I'm Googling in. Mm-hmm. We've allowed that to kind of persuade us from what we really should be about. We should be about helping people. We should be about investing in our community. There's no reason why, as many churches we have in our community, that we don't have any credit unions, that we don't have any, that we're not sending all of our kids to college, not just an educational day for our particular group. No, we can put our funds together and create the Black Wall Street. How come we can't have one of those here in the city of Buffalo? I believe that as long as we continue to be segregated, then we're watering down the power and authority, not spiritually, but naturally, the power and authority that we carry, and we're not able to really help along the lines as we really are capable of doing.
Yeah,
we really are capable of doing a whole lot more, but we're distracted, we're segregated, we have all these denominations, and denominations should not stop us from working together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand what you believe, but the truth of the matter is community should be a common denominator.
Yeah.
All of us should be working to better our communities. And for some, it's a priority, and for others, it's not, you know?
Well, speaking of segregation, there has been this conversation online that has been happening recently. In light of the presidential election, there has been this conversation about the church and then the Black church as a separate body, a separate identity, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The idea has been that the church is a Republican body, right? Mm-hmm. The church should vote one way, but then the Black church has been, I'm going to use the words that have been used in these videos I've been seeing online, they've been calling out the Black church for being a largely Democratic body. And we don't have to go into the conversation of, should the church be Republican? Should the church be Democrat? I think any logical person knows that people vote their own interests. So you might have a church where with a lot of different political beliefs. You might have one body where there are people who are apolitical or don't believe in a party system at all. But can you speak to the idea that the Black church is somehow irresponsible for being more liberal in thought?
I do not even ascribe to the ideal. I know we say it as a form of ID, but there is no white church or Black church. When Jesus said, upon this rock, I will build my church and the gates of hell will not prevail against. He did not make any specific. He didn't say, upon this Black church, I will build, upon this rock, I will build my Black church. And I will, over on this rock, I'm going to build, you know, my white church and then a Chinese church. And there was no specifications there. So we are the church. Now, the issue is that sometimes we get confused because we think that the president is supposed to align itself with biblical beliefs, and the president is not running for bishop.
I like that.
He's not running for bishop. He's not running to be installed as the pastor. So the president is a government official who is elected by the people. So therefore, he has to look out for all the people, right? Regardless of whatever they may be, they have to look out for the people.
Yeah.
So that people is incumbent of many facets of life. You know, he has to be the president of Muslim faith. He has to be president of Buddhists. He has to be they have to be president of the people.
Right.
He's not running for a religious office. So therefore, I cannot say that the church needs to be heavily into the political game, because I've never really got down with the politicians, because what if you're saying something I don't like? I am not about to be bound in your back pocket, not being able to speak truth to power because you're saying something and I need something from no. So these senators, the mayor, whomever, I don't really follow or fall in line, because, you know, what if you saying, so I'm the one that's bound to scripture,
right?
And I'm going to hold accountable to scripture. He's not holding accountable to scripture. He's holding accountable to the people he served.
Yeah.
And it's my job to speak, hey, Mr. Sister, mm-hmm. President, Mayor, blah, blah, blah. That's not going to benefit the people that we serve. Mm-hmm. This is what we need, and this is how we need to get it done. And I can be an opposing voice without worry of any type of repercussions, right. You know, any type of backlash. No, because I was never in your pocket in the first place. Mm-hmm. The church needs to be able to stand and speak and not be worried about if you're going to cancel my project, if you're going to not let me get my building project off the ground. Yeah. Building new homes, and you're not going to let me, you know, I got to go through the chambers in order to get. No, even if I can't get it, the Lord will provide, right? So I'm going to speak however is placed upon my heart without fear of any ramifications. So the church needs to be in politics, outside of politics. Yeah. You know, we need to be able to speak to the kings. And then at the same time, you know, we're in this city, so we have to also put into it. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you got to be able to say, hey, all right, that ain't working. That doesn't, mm-hmm. that's not right. And stop being a yes man or a yes woman to everything that these politicians are saying and letting them just run through our community as if we are nobodies and yeah. nothings. No, we are a powerful force mm-hmm. once we come together. Yeah. We are a powerful force once we are able to speak clearly without wondering if they're going to cancel our 501c3s. I think this whole segregation piece between the white church and the black church, there's the old saying, they're saying that the most segregated hour in America is Sunday morning during service, because the white folk gonna go to their church, black folk gonna go to their church, and then we never really come together. Mm-hmm. And it seems as how can we be so segregated and separated, but we still call ourselves professing the same gospel?
Yeah.
How can we be on two separate ends of the scale, but we all say that we're preaching and trying to reach the same people? I don't see that.
Yeah.
And when I connect with my brothers and sisters, whether they're, you know, suburban or inner city, I speak it the same. Like, you know, no, y'all only thinking about your understanding from your experiences. Many of these people in the inner city did not grow up with those advantages or mm-hmm. those opportunities. So you cannot place your experiences and blanket it across the city, because it doesn't work. Yeah. You know, we have different experiences. So for anyone to say and stand up and try to rebuke the entire black church lets me know that you haven't spent no time and try to come for the largest black Pentecostal organization in the world.
Yeah.
Bruh, you tripping. You know, and I am grateful and I applaud the Pentecostal church movement that they have responded with dignity. They have responded with tact. They have responded, you know, through, you know, how the Bible would suggest. And now, you know, my question is, why are so many of our other white brothers and sisters so quiet? Where's your voice of rage? Where's your voice of concern? Don't come to the black church preaching about racism. Trust me.
We know. We get it.
We understand it. Come on. Mm-hmm. We don't need that sermon. That sermon needs to be had in your pulpit, because now if he's offending, you know, the so-called black church, isn't that, that's the, what we're using it for now, mm-hmm. then there should be some reprimand from that side as well.
Right.
And right now, it's real quiet.
Yeah, yeah.
It's real quiet, so.
So it sounds like you're saying, like, the responsibility of the church is not to politics, it's to the people surviving politics.
Yeah. We become too political. Now, I understand that there are some things that you have to be in order to change.
Yeah.
I got that. But there's still a voice that's necessary on the outside mm-hmm. that even checks them. Okay, you in there. But this is, if you're speaking for us, you know, then you need to have our heart.
Yeah.
You need to have, you know, what we're saying, what we need, what we, I don't know, I'm just a pastor, you know, what I know. But scripture says that Esther went before the king and she said, you know, this, he's not some of me, but me going there is a danger, but I got the weight of my people. Mm-hmm. Because if I don't, they're going to die. They're going to be hung. They're going to be on these gallows. So I have to go in there and have a conversation with this king, even though it may cost me my life. Someone has to carry the weight of the people, mm-hmm. you know, and hear what we're saying. But once you get in there, don't forget about us. Don't forget. You know, you get in there and they start promise you all this, all the stuff, and you like, oh, they're gonna be all right. Yeah, you know, they made it this far. They're gonna no. You have to still carry the voice of the people, and too many times the voice gets silent once they get in. So I prefer to stand on the outside and yell through the gate, you know, and protest or whatever we got to do on the outside, so that we don't get it twisted. Can I still use that word? Yeah, can I? Is that all right?
I'll allow it. I'll allow
you allow it. All right. So don't get it twisted that, you know, that we're falling, you know, subject to, because it's a beast.
Yeah.
You know, and that machine will chew you up, spit you out, or conform you to something that you never intended to be.
Yeah.
You know, so. I keep a little distance. Mm-hmm. I keep a little distance, you know, from the politicians, only so that I can speak a truth.
Yeah.
And don't have to be worried about, you know, I know you know about speaking that truth, don't you?
I feel that.
Yeah,
I feel
you
that.
Be yelling it from the top of the, I'm like, oh my God, Jill, you're killing me. Speak your truth, girl. Speak
everybody,
it.
I stress my pastor out sometimes. but I get that. I've had a lot of people ask, you know, when are you running for office? When is your name going to be on the ballot? And I'm like, listen, I see myself as more of an agitator, you know, accountability partner of sorts, you know, somebody has to do that part.
Yeah.
So I totally understand that the church can play that role in holding people accountable and saying as a united body, we will not vote for you if you do not meet our needs. And I think in a city like ours, Buffalo, right, where we've seen one mayor for, I don't know, almost 20 years. This was the mayor when I was in high school. I'm about to be 32. We've seen one leadership body for so long, but we haven't seen a lot of change. There hasn't been collective socioeconomic growth for Black people in over 30 years in my lifetime, you know? So when it comes to our city on a larger scale, especially we're going into a new identity, having a new mayor for the first time in forever. We have women on our common council. The identity of our leadership is changing. So as somebody who is aligned with the people and not necessarily with politics, if you could wave a magic wand and change things in our city while we have this, I won't say a clean slate, because you can never have a clean slate, but while we have this opportunity to redefine how our city works for us and how it functions for us, what would you do? What would Buffalo look like?
That is a very interesting question, because even though our government officials were in this whole transition period, I don't think my focus would be there. Again, I will still stand on the side that I am, because the Dr. Kings had a voice to presidents, you know, the Malcolm X, they had voices to, you know, world leaders. I think that if now that we have a clean slate, right, you know, using your words, this clean slate of a new mayor and government officials that are coming in, the face of our government seems to be, you know, shifting and changing. I still think my level of influence would still be focused on rallying and gathering a mindset amongst our people, our Black brothers and sisters, because the truth of the matter is that it don't matter who you put in office. If the people is not applying no pressure to say these are the things we need and deserve, then we're going to get the same thing we got for the last 20 years. So I would say that the focus needs to be to continue educating our citizens and educating our people and our young people to don't let up and don't release that pressure. The government officials are working, are supposed to be working for us, right?
Exactly.
They're supposed to be working for us. They're supposed to have us in such value that, you know, we should be seeing what we need in the city. But if no one's saying anything, if there's no voice of opposition, if there's even no desire and we've just gone with the flow, then there will never be any type of change that we need. There may be change for others.
Right.
My mama used to tell me, boy, if there's cranes in the city, there's money somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, all right, mama, you going to preach
and
tonight.
We have some cranes.
And you see, if they're building and if they're still making investment, trust me, there's money coming from somewhere. So we have to figure out how to get into those conversations, how to be present. Why are all these contracts going to whomever? Mm-hmm. And we're not seeing those contracts into our black businesses and brown businesses. Where is all of these opportunities? And because, again, the mayor or the government, they're there to government people, not just us, but people. The saying is the squeaky wheel gets the oil. So who's making the most noise? Mm-hmm. Who's showing the most profit? Who's showing the most value? That's who they're going to lean toward. They can care less what nationality they are. And we're seeing that in our city. But if we would rally and then start holding our officials accountable, and the new mayor that comes in, not thinking we're just going to have more of the same. No, now we got some stuff we need done. Mm-hmm. Here's our voice. We need to see some things happen, you know, in the police force, in our firefighters. We need to see some stuff happen with our counselors, with all of those. We need to see some things happen that will benefit not just black folk, but all of us.
That was Pastor Charles McCarley. And we close today's show with Jay Moran's conversation with Jasmine Westbrook, a healthcare advocate for the Health Education Project. The two discuss her role in creating opportunities for individuals to learn more about what they can do for their health and how to create better healthcare opportunities in Western New York.
Let's start with the Health Education Project. Why don't you just give us an overview?
Okay, so again, my name is Jasmine Westbrook. I'm a healthcare advocate with the Healthcare Education Project. We are a joint effort of the 1199 SEIU Healthcare Labor Union and also the Greater New York Hospital Association. So my role as a healthcare advocate, I am also a community organizer in some aspects. So we educate the community on different healthcare topics. So each month, depending on, like this month, for instance, we have a one pager when I go out and speak with different community groups and tabling sessions about HIV awareness.
Okay.
And so I attended an event this past Saturday in support of a support group in our community that was hosting an event, and I was able to talk about that, listen to their stories, and see how we can partner in the future. And then also, when it comes to access to healthcare, our big campaign right now is the Medicaid Equity Campaign. And so we're speaking with state legislators and urging the governor to increase funding so Medicaid can be fully funded in New York State, because so many New Yorkers rely on Medicaid. And so we have a dual role, I say. We do a lot in our community when it comes to coalition building and really educating our community on healthcare and health topics, and then also on a statewide level.
I'm really intrigued about the organizing aspect of this. I can imagine what that's like in a lot of ways. In a way, I mean, it's important work, obviously. At the same time, we're off, you know, just got off of COVID. You know, people don't necessarily want to interact like they used to, or
yes,
people are slowly coming back. So what's that like for you, the organizing element of this?
So what you said is definitely true. It definitely could be a challenge in some capacities, especially knowing when something needs to be virtual or have that hybrid component. A lot of the actions that we do, we may do joint rallies that can't be virtual, that has to be in person. But if it's an information session, or we have a smaller group that we're speaking to, whether it's a black club or a community organization that might have their own private meetings, then we can do it to fit that group whatever works best. So we really have to think about the population that we're trying to serve. Even when it comes to speaking with the elected officials, Zoom has been a big tool that we've been using. But if we're in Albany, then we'll be wanting to speak in person. Or if that elected official is in home, in their home office, then meet there. So it's really just seeing what makes most sense at that time and just trying to meet that person where they're at.
Sure. Getting to where people were at. So you went to this HIV support group.
Yes.
And you heard their stories.
Yes.
Well, you probably learn an awful lot when you go to an event like that. What can you share with us?
So with that event, it was hosted, Dawn Trotter, she is the executive director of the support group Woman to Woman, We Are One. And so I attended it a few days ago, and the stories that I've heard from the women were very powerful, and it really just showed how mental health is intertwined and domestic violence is intertwined in some cases with people and how they can contract HIV. And then also that mental health aspect when it comes to after knowing your diagnosis and getting comfortable with speaking about it and the power of that and to whatever capacity they're at. So the women that were speaking were obviously okay saying their status. They're advocates now. And they were speaking about ways that they've tried to, it's difficult to in the healthcare setting because of HIPAA and not.
Understood.
And not invading anyone's healthcare, but also making sure that they were aware or making people aware of the support groups that are there so they have someone to speak to. And even down to one of the ladies shared how her most frightening group of people to talk to was her church community because she didn't want to be judged, and how much they embraced her once she talked about it and how much it was in her head. And it wasn't, it was just like that uncertainty.
Sure.
And just knowing how to really support other women who may be going through that. And so it was just many aspects, not only talking about the disease itself and the medication, because you can go to the doctor and get that, but being okay in these social settings.
That's really a very powerful story to share there, because, you know, your HIV, it could have come from so many different pathways,
yes.
Right? And yet there's that sense in this woman's case of shame, and that somehow talking to her congregation, you know, would make her almost feel like an outcast. I don't want to say a typical story, but are those the types, do you find stories like that where there are that's an obstacle to health that, you know, it's not something people are drawing up on paper, but it's a real issue?
I would say yes, especially in a disease like HIV, because the stigma attached to it and how in the beginning, how it was shown as like a gay man's disease, and that's been debunked, but
right.
That conversation is still happening, or you were a drug user. And when you're not one or the other, it's like, where do I have that space to talk about it and not be judged? And that was like the underlying conversation that was happening with a few women that did speak.
Yeah, and but you had also that sense that inside that room, that those conversations, people there was a trusting sense,
yes.
And
yes.
Of encouragement.
And that's why it's so important for support groups, no matter what the illness, the disease, whatever you want to name it, because you have someone who is either a caretaker or going through it as well that can relate to you, and you have that space to talk about it along with getting the medical treatment that you need from the providers.
Yeah, so let's maybe expand on that, because like you said, it's not just HIV, but there's so many other things that are ailing our communities. So what are some of those other types of, you know, health issues that you're finding yourself in those places? It sounds like you're a little bit of everywhere.
Yeah. So each month, I'm trying to meet with a different support group. So like the last few months, I've worked with the Sickle Cell Warriors of Buffalo, and so I've actually worked with them in a few scenarios. I actually met them and they were hosting a blood drive and an informational session, and I actually found out that I have the blood type that actually helps people with sickle cell, which was like, wow, that was surprising, because you have to, if you're African American, I can't think of the exact letters, but sure, the American Red Cross has all the information you need.
Very good.
Again, I am not the expert as an organizer.
You're taking in a lot of information, yes, and a lot of personal stories.
But it was just interesting that, you know, as an individual, now I'm able to donate blood and give it to that special group. And so that was all the way back in March when I attended that, when I first had the first encounter. And then now with the Medicaid Equity Campaign, I've been able to gather stories and have the members of the Sickle Cell Warriors of Buffalo, they've been able to share their stories with the legislators. And one of them actually was in a press coverage we had to speak about the importance of Medicaid and how it can help them, because they never know when they have to go into crisis. That's the term that they use.
Okay.
And the crisis could be very different depending on the person, but basically they need to get emergency treatment. And that's the big thing in these safety net hospitals and urgent care treatments and emergency rooms, making sure that we have enough staffing and enough funding to provide the care that our community members need. And that was like a really big thing. And then another support group is We Are As One. It's a cancer support group.
Mm.
And so Miss Annette is the leader in that one, and she had a phenomenal event in October, really just showing love to the women that they might have already had the cancer remission, or they might be currently getting the treatment. It was a array of women in a room. She made it really beautiful. Everybody left with a gift. It was like free raffles. We had great food, but we also had great information. And so we had someone, I believe from Roswell Park, come and speak. And then there was another provider in the room speaking as well, talking about getting your mammogram. And then also for men, because men can have breast cancer as well, and that's something that's not talked about, and making sure like the facts are facts and the myths are debunked, and that's really important in these spaces. And I enjoy doing that, not only because it's my job, but I like to be a wealth of information and share with different individuals the information that's important for them, so we can all have healthier lives.
So I mean, this is one of those questions that everybody talks about, but I'll let you describe it for yourself. The obstacles that we're seeing, especially in the African-American community,
mm-hmm,
from health. You know, you mentioned the Medicaid portion, and we can most certainly get into that a little more extensively. But I'm just kind of curious about some of the other obstacles that you're hearing about. Why, you know, whatever the case may be, but what is maybe preventing somebody from either living a healthier life or getting well, somebody who's you know, very ill?
So access to care, whether it's the insurance that you may have, what the insurance covers, or not having insurance, unemployment can be a determiner. So social determinants of health, that's a huge one. Let's say someone lost their job or now is moved down from full-time to part-time, they may not have those benefits. In New York State, we do have the Medicaid system, but that's not true everywhere. That could be a huge determiner. Access to care, when it comes to locations or where facilities are. So in my neighborhood, I don't have an urgent care. I have a vehicle. I can drive into the suburbs to one, but I don't have an urgent care. I would just go to ECMC, but that's already overpacked.
Right.
And so when
the idea was originally to have these satellite locations, so to speak.
Because there's a bunch of well nows in a lot of suburban
sure
communities.
I'm flashing our Orchard Park, Amherst.
Yeah.
I can see it in my mind. Yeah.
And are these facilities on bus lines? Everyone doesn't have the luxury of having a vehicle. And making sure that people can actually get to the services that they need before they're sick, too. And a lot of times people are weighing out when it comes to co-payments. Well, I don't have the $40 for the co-payment, so they're letting this illness stay in their body and doing the best they can to medicate on their own, but they're not getting the treatment that they need, and then they're visiting the urgent care or the emergency room when now it's a more severe diagnosis. And so those are a few obstacles, even when it comes to the food we have, the quality of food. The access to food is not the same across the city or across the county, however we want to break it down. And so making sure that we have healthy food options and a re-education of how to preserve foods. And we do have limited income in some places, and making sure that we're using our money in the best place. And it's just a lot of different factors when it comes to social determinants of health. Sure. Our housing, some of our houses are killing us.
Yes.
With the lead paint, the lead pipes, we have old housing stock in the city of Buffalo. So the list goes on and on and on.
Yeah, but it's interesting that to put a spotlight on those types of things, because the one thing you have, it seems, maybe compared to some other conversation you have about this, I mean, you're dealing with people like this in all sorts of venues, and people who are sick in all sorts of different ways. It seems to come from, so I guess what I'm asking you is, you see at the end of the day, no matter how many conversations there have been about this, there are still systemic issues. Correct. That are just not, are very much in the way of people living healthier lives.
That's correct.
Yeah. Let's get into some of the other elements of the health education project then. So you mentioned stressed when we first met, nonpartisan, right?
Yes, I am nonpartisan in this space.
But that's got to be an important part of that, right?
Yes. So when it comes to advocacy for healthcare, we also want to make sure that our community members are voting and making sure they are civically engaged. And so a huge lift of what we did from August up into the election in November was making sure that not only were we registering people to vote, making sure that they update their address, making sure that they're looking at their ballot. And also making sure that they're bringing people to the polls with them. So back in August, we did a day of action, partnered with a few other local organizations, and we educated people on how to do phone banking. And so it was community members calling other community members to get them registered to vote and talk to them about different issues. So if someone picked up the phone, it was great. It was hard to get people to answer with all the spam likelies.
Of course.
But once we were able to speak to community members, just seeing what's important to them. And it wasn't just like register to vote. Okay, bye. It was trying to have a conversation with someone. And some people appreciate that. And it's good to know what issues are important to our community. And so when it comes to healthcare, we were really making sure that people have factual information. We had a one pager talking about what is going on with our healthcare. A big thing was like the cap of insulin. If people said, I have issues with paying for my medicine. Well, if you're diabetic or you know someone who is diabetic that meets the criteria, I believe it's Medicare age recipients that will get the $35 insulin cap. Well, may get it.
Right.
That's what it was. I'll stay nonpartisan. But
You're doing well.
Making sure that they know that is something that is happening, and making sure community members know like that is in the next budget. When you hear it in the news, doesn't mean it's happening the next day, because that's another education piece too, understanding how our budgets work, whether it's the county, the state, or the federal. And government is slower, but it doesn't happen overnight. And just having those conversations with people, and then back to voting, getting them to the polls. So we also did a Souls to the Polls with Voice Buffalo at the Delavan Grider Community Center.
It was a huge success, I heard.
Yes. And it was a lot of community organizations doing different things. The National Panhellenic Council with the black fraternities and sororities were doing the children's voting inside, which is great. So as the parents were standing in line, the children were able to do that and get that in their mind early. I believe Horizon Health was outside helping with a raffle to get people engaged. We had a DJ, we had food. It was cold, but we had a great turnout.
Yeah.
And then also the Board of Election was very active helping people go to other sites too if they didn't want to wait. And so it was just a great community effort. And that's something that I've been participating in since 2020. And that was when early voting was really big that first time for the presidential.
Right.
And so we started at the Gloria J this year. We the last few years we've been at Della Van Grider, but just making sure that we're where the community is going. And with there's a lot of community organizations that were helping, and we actually had a strategic plan that was through the NAACP where different community organizations, the League of Women Voters, UB Votes, just to name a few, where different districts were focusing on different parts of the city. So it wasn't chaotic.
Right.
And that was great.
Yeah. We're talking with Jasmine Westbrook of the Health Education Project this morning on What's Next. I want to stay on this voting discussion for a little bit. This is, I right at the election, I talked to a coworker who was somebody who was making a part of a phone bank and was calling. And what struck me is, you know, like you said, a lot of people aren't answering. That's the first thing. Or a lot of people might answer and hang up. But then these conversations, this is kind of hard for me because, you know, I'm sitting listening to the news in the morning here at WBFO for 5 hours a day. And so I'm hearing all these stories. And it feels to me like I'm hearing the same stories all the time. I'm hearing the same information. Everybody must know what's happening here. And what this individual told me is how many people that she was able to get through appreciated it because now there was a conversation about things that they had no idea about. And is that what you find as well?
Yes. So whether phone banking or canvassing, going door to door, those conversations are really powerful. And I think it's really good for me and other people that are doing the phone banking and the canvassing to make sure they're having a conversation and not just getting out whatever their message is to the individual, but making sure it's a two-way conversation. Because I just know what I know. I don't know what the community member really believes. I might know a fact sheet.
So you hear some things that are kind of stunning, like take you aback?
Yes, and some of it is misinformation, but some of it is just experiences I have not experienced.
Right.
And so it is good to hear and know how can I take what this conversation was back? And then even if it's something that I need to then recall them later or revisit them, or if it was something that I didn't have the answer to, being honest about it.
I know you were, of course, the voting registration drive was focused on the presidential election. But there's a mayoral election that's going to be taking place here, and we know at least three candidates are in it. There might be more coming as well. Any sense right now about interest in that? Just a conversation I had yesterday about how some people just feel it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Why should I vote? I'm wasting my vote.
So with New York State not being a swing state, that was already a conversation that I was having with people this year. Oh, I'm not in Pennsylvania. It doesn't matter how I vote. We always vote blue. And, you know, so the local politics and local races is something that I always talk about. And that is mostly, or not mostly, but a lot of times that is the conversation that I have with people. They care more about the local because that is what impacts them at a faster rate than what's going on the federal. Yes, federal is about providing the funding that then trickles down, but they don't see the president walking in their neighborhoods, but they see their local officials. They see them at events. They might see them in a grocery store.
right.
So it's just more attainable and it's just more relatable conversation.
Yeah. So you have a sense then that interest is going to be particularly high for this
I hope election. So. What I'm doing, like even at the event I was at a few days ago, I had my voter registration forms. And when I said my spiel, I'm like, and make sure you register to vote and take this to your young, your young adult.
You had some takers, yeah?
At that event, people all told me they were, but you know, sometimes they just say that to get me out their face, but at least they heard feeling. Me. But I have an event coming up that is with Buffalo Futures, which is for the 16 to 24 demographic. So I will make sure I'm having those one-on-one conversations with the young people, because you can't register to vote even before 18 at 16 and 17 in New York State, just to make sure that they're already registered. And then also if they are registered, making sure that they're updating their address and actually going to the polls.
Jasmine, we're coming down to our final couple of minutes here. So I wanted to make sure I've enjoyed the sweeping kind of subject matters that we've had, and I appreciate you. You obviously can talk about a lot of different things, but what about the call to action when it comes to the health education project? What do you want people to know?
So we want people to know that right now, New York State is paying 70 cents to every dollar back to nursing homes and hospitals for community members who have Medicaid. So that means that Medicaid is not fully funded. That means that our hospitals and our nursing homes have a deficit. And so what that means to us as community members, even if you're not a Medicaid recipient, but you go to a facility that has a high volume of Medicaid recipients, if you need emergency care in a facility that has a high volume of Medicaid recipients, you're being impacted with the underfunding, which how that shows up is longer wait times, understaffing, access to services, service line closures, removal of facilities. And so that's happening across our state. And so we need a fully funded Medicaid program in New York State so we can be healthier and people can get the treatment that they need and they deserve, because healthcare is a right.
What's the hope about that particular issue? I mean, it's been kicked about here for a little bit.
So we launched it last year, so we're coming into our second year of a four-year campaign. So over a four-year period, we're hoping that it will be 100% fully funded. There was a 4% increase, so technically we're at 73-74% now for New York State being funded, and we just hope that we reach that 100%. And the way we do that is by collecting stories from New Yorkers, so that's a big campaign that we're hosting. We have community members all the way from Buffalo to Long Island recording 30 to 60 second stories. We have clergy members and community members signing on, doing different rallies, different press conferences, speaking with the elected officials, just making sure that Governor Hochul puts that on the budget to increase the funding to 100% by that 4-year period.
And that will do it for today's edition of Producer's Picks. We thank our guests, Pastor Charles McCarley and Jasmine Westbrook. If you missed anything or want to hear it again, you can get this program as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Each episode is online at wbfo.org. I'm Michael Loss. Thanks for listening.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.